Devil's Daredevil Season 2, Episode 8, Guilty as Sin is over, but we're just getting started here on post-show recaps talking about it. Hello, everybody. I'm Josh Wigler, and I'm so glad that my co-host here got my message to show up on time for this podcast. Kevin Mahadeo, I see you got my message.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. The ending of this episode.
We're just going to very, very, very quickly just say, spoiler alert, spoiler alert, spoiler alert. If you have somehow wandered into this podcast and you did not mean to wander into this podcast, if you are earlier behind, if you're far behind on Daredevil and you're not up to episode 8 and you're like, oh no, I'm not supposed to be in the episode 8 podcast, turn away, because the thing happens at the end of the episode that we cannot contain our excitement about. We are going to talk about it right now. That's it. That's the warning. Kingpin!
We talked early in the beginning of this season, like whether or not we thought we were going to see Wilson Fisk. I was sure. I don't think we were. And we did.
We got him.
I'm so excited about that. Like we talked at the end of the last episode how it was the most exciting ending and made me want to continue.
I know.
That is now taken aback. This is the one.
Oh,
this is the
man. Yeah. So we're going to do this podcast in like 5 minutes so I can get back to watching the show.
Yeah, like we, oh my gosh. Yeah, what, oh God, I love it.
Daredevil,
I love it so much.
Daredevil season 2 is on fire right now. Kingpin revealed at the end of the episode, and for all the complaining that I did about the credits earlier, I went back and looked. There's no Vincent D'Onofrio in the credits or anything, but he pops up, you know, right after he's revealed in the prison when he says, I see you got my message, and then it pounds to special guest star Vincent D'Onofrio. Thank you for keeping that a secret, Marvel. That was a very good choice.
He's not the only person that popped up in this episode either, though.
Like, who else?
Stick shows up.
Stick is here. Stick is here.
That was great. Actually, you know, as awesome as the ending is, which is very, very awesome, the beginning was also pretty cool because it just opens up with Ninja Fight.
Yeah, ninja! Yeah, this is a terrific episode of Daredevil. I mean, I still think that just because of the amazingness of the performance back in episode 4 from Jon Bernthal, I'm still inclined to give that one the edge, but this was a really, really solid episode of Daredevil. This has to be number 2 on the list so far, at least.
I don't know. I think, I might be biased because I just got the Kingpin thing here, but I think it might be my favorite so far.
Look, man, it kicks the door down for future episodes. You got to assume that Kingpin is, if not in it for the long haul, at least in it for a stretch. He will at the very least have some memorable moments coming up. It's really great to have this guy back on the show. This has been, you know, really a big part of our conversation all throughout this thing. You know, we haven't talked about it too much, but we have certainly said that Vincent D'Onofrio as Wilson Fisk is the best Marvel Cinematic Universe villain possibly. You know, second only maybe to Tom Hiddleston as Loki. I think maybe even better than that. So this is a guy who, he just brings so much weight, literally, and gravitas. He brings so much gravitas to every single scene that he is in, and he's such a magnetic character to follow, and it's so hard to fill the void left behind by that guy. So hard that we had to have two big characters show up this season in Punisher and Elektra. And now we have those people in place, plus we have the Kingpin. We are really, really queued up for some great Daredevil.
Yeah, I am pumped. Let's get into it, and then we can start really ranting at the end.
Yes.
About all this stuff.
We just had to start with the big headline because that is really great stuff. But this whole episode is awesome, beginning with the hole.
Yes, beginning with the hole, the giant hole we find. It opens up with, there, it hit. Yeah. Like, I love it. I love that follow-up from the end of the previous one. And then just straight up just goes into a huge ninja fight where the hand show. I mean, it's the hand. It's the hand. There's no avoiding saying this, especially since it's confirmed later on.
Yeah.
It's the hand. They're here, and it's awesome.
The hand shows up. The hand is here. Someone just shows up and starts throwing shurikens at them. And Matt, he's got a problem. He can't hear any of these people. Why can't he hear these people, Kevin?
Because they're super ninjas, basically. Like, they're keeping their heartbeat. It's kind of like what Nobu did. He didn't sense Nobu at all because his heartbeat is completely still. They make no sound when movement. I love Elektra saying they're carrying weapons, focus on the weapons, and that he could hear, which is cool. Like, I love that as her kind of telling, you know, kind of honing him in. Because obviously, understandably, for a guy who can sense everything, not being able to sense anything is reason to freak out, especially since the last time he was unable to sense someone, they messed him up bad,
real, real bad. We had a question in from Ahmed who said, I think we established in season 1 that Matt can see shapes, so how does he not see the ninjas moving around him even without hearing their heartbeat?
That I don't know, and that's a very good question.
Very good question.
I mean, he sees shapes because the shapes are coming from the sound they make. That's the whole thing. Like, the fact that they're not making any sound for whatever reason is why I think he can't see their shapes.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to nitpick that too much, because the ninja battle is awesome. It is dope, and it is not even the only ninja battle of this episode.
No, it's great. Like, I love, though, that Matt Electra goes to kill someone. Matt's like, no, don't, and then gets her brutally injured.
Yeah, like almost gets her killed because of that.
Yeah, almost gets himself killed too, until Stick shows up in the most awesome way possible. Just like, I have in my notes, like, oh, why, hello, Stick.
Yeah.
Like, he just kind of pops in. And I, like, throughout this entire episode, there's just so much that he does that I'm just like, man, I love Stick. He's great. Stick is awesome.
To the plan. Ha ha ha.
Ha ha.
Yeah.
Keith Nalen.
He shows up here. It's wild. And we get special guest star Scott Glenn. That's going to be in the credits if you go back and look. So both of the big surprises of this episode were concealed. That's great.
Which is smart, especially after what happened in episode 4.
Great pacing. Really, really fantastically done. Stick is he's got a car. They all get the hell out of there. At first I didn't realize that Stick had a driver.
Me too, and I was so confused about what was happening. And yeah. I was like, oh wait, someone else is driving a car. That makes a lot more sense now.
I was like,
and he's just like arrowing people left and right.
Yeah.
Not Oliver Queen arrowing, like actually shooting people with arrows.
Yeah, he has like a crossbow that he is using, and he just like throws it over his shoulder and just like shoots it at the back of the window.
Yeah, I love it. Like, we saw him use bow and arrow in the first season, and in like a, almost like Master Splinter style, which is actually where Master Splinter comes from, by the way. I don't know if you knew that, the name. But yeah, no, it's awesome. He's so badass. It's kind of nuts.
He's really great. We got this in from R. Philly, who says, considering it's 2016, is Stick's car really an appropriate choice for a blind ninja master waging a secret war in New York City if he actually wants to remain incognito?
He doesn't know what the car looks like. I mean, that's accurate. He has no idea what the car
You don't think anyone told him? It's like, dude, your car really stands out.
I mean, maybe someone may have mentioned that, but he certainly has no clue. Yeah. Like, he's not like Matt. He can't see, you know, he doesn't see a car on fire. Like, he has no clue of what that car looks like. So someone, his driver probably picked it out and was like, I like this car.
Yeah, the driver's like, yo, this car's dope.
Yeah.
This car's so cool. So Stick is, you know, he's shooting arrows. Matt is in the back with Electra, who is not doing well at all.
Yeah, like that. It's a bad injury, and she's like clearly in pain. Matt's freaking out, and again, obviously there's romantic stuff here, but I kind of really like that it could also have just been like a person very concerned for their partner and friend.
Yeah.
And thankfully though, Stick knows exactly what to do in this situation. He needs what was it? Baking soda, whiskey. Tea.
Yeah, he wants whiskey, pliers, black tea, and baking soda.
Yeah.
So he MacGyvers a lot of that stuff together. He's going
sort of ninja magic, I guess.
Yeah, he's going to put some. He says she'll be dead in 20 minutes if I don't pull some serious juju out of my ass. Because it wasn't bad enough that she got sliced by a sword. She got sliced by a poisoned sword, which I think is instructive for events later on in the episode.
Yeah, that definitely comes in later on, which in another very awesome ninja fight way.
Yeah, we'll get into all of that. But I love, like, you know, he's like, I'm going to help her, but not before I make it a whole lot worse. You know, she's howling like a banshee as
he stabs her with the pliers.
Yeah,
like,
he pries her open. Yeah, he pries her open, pours that whole mixture on her. They'll know later on if she's going to make it or not. She'll recover in the next 24 hours or she won't. My favorite part of this, obviously, is when Stick just drinks the tea. He's like, oh, thank you.
Yeah, I love that Matt has like a look on his face too, like when Stick just like gets the tea and starts drinking it and then just like, and then just goes back to like concentrating on Electra a bit.
Yeah.
And holding her hand all nicely and sweetly.
Yeah, it's great.
And then though, a comment happens that I was real excited about because Matt comes out and is like, oh, is she going to be okay? And Stick says, like, I've known her, you know, to survive worse. Like, you know, he comments about how he knows her to be strong. And it's awesome because I was really excited because I'm like, oh, yes, Stick knows her, because that's something straight from the comics. Like, she was trained by Stick in the comics. It's a big plot point that basically she was replacement Matt when Matt ran away to do his own thing.
And we definitely get that throughout this episode. I mean, not in like super, super vivid detail, but we're certainly starting to see that Elektra and Stick are in business together.
Yes, and it's really great. That's just a point that I was very excited they included because it's straight out from the comics, and it made me very happy. Like, yeah, this is what, like, it's things like this that's kind of making me love this episode, I think, as my favorite so far.
R. Philly had written in and said, a few episodes ago, Kevin alluded to a relationship between Stick and Elektra in the comics. Is this relationship an accurate depiction of what he's familiar with? Based on what you're saying, Kevin, sounds like it's a big fat yes.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, the basics of it is definitely the same. Elektra definitely has a different, somewhat different personality in the comics, but this is right there with, yeah, this is exactly how it is in that he trained her and everything, and it's awesome, and it's great, and I love it, and it makes me happy.
So Matt, obviously, understandably, has his hands full, so he is not going to show up at court the next day.
The worst lawyer!
Worst lawyer ever! There's an argument for that, by the way, based on the way this episode plays out.
Yeah, he's just bad. He's bad.
But he's a no-show. Foggy was like, I told him to stay home because we fought, but I didn't really totally mean it.
Yeah, right? Like, which I guess, I mean, it was an intense argument. Foggy should have... I know that, like, Foggy knows Matt, so he probably didn't think Matt really would, but then here Matt's not showed up, and he's like, oh no, he actually listened to me for once, because he normally never listens to him.
Yeah, usually the approach I take with him is I tell him what I don't want him to do because I actually want him to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Which did not seem to be working out here. Poor Foggy, who is just always nervous about doing anything lawyery.
Yes.
Matt's really bad at it. Foggy is nervous about doing it, but then ends up really good.
Yeah, no, he is the legal kung fu master. You know, he is good at this stuff. So we're going to see him. He's going to have to take the lead. And boy, howdy, if this episode couldn't have possibly been better, we have Clancy Brown
is
going to show up here.
The real Lex Luthor.
Are you kidding me? Another question from R. Philly, who had said, how loudly did Josh squeal in delight when Clancy Brown showed up? I think the answer is something like, wah!
No, I was so excited just from the voice. I was like, oh my God, it's Clancy Brown.
Yeah.
Like, I was so pumped. Like, I love Clancy Brown.
Clancy Brown, for those of you who do not know, he is the guy who is playing Ray Schoonover, the U.S. Marine Corps CO that Frank said in the past episode could be a character witness for him. Super recognizable actor. He's definitely one of those that guys. If you don't know his work off the top of your head, or if you don't know his name off the top of your head either, he has been in a ton of stuff. I'm just going to say it, Kevin. He was on Lost.
Well, that's not the one I will say.
Sure. He was on Carnival. He was he gets his head chopped off in the Sleepy Hollow pilot. Spoiler alert. He is in a ton of stuff. And for
Starship Troopers, he plays a military guy.
It's
real
Zim. Often. Zim got the bug.
Exactly. Yeah. And he's the voice of Lex Luthor in the DC animated universe from Batman the Animated Series all the way to Justice League Unlimited. And he is phenomenal as Lex Luthor. I love Clancy Brown.
Clancy Brown is a really great actor. He's also in the DC universe in live action in terms of the TV shows. He is on The Flash.
Yeah, and he's great. Like,
and he's military there as well.
Like a military person. Yeah. He just has a very military-esque persona about him, I guess.
Absolutely. So they have him here in this one scene. He is here as a character witness for Frank Castle, and he tells this really amazing story where he talks about, you know, he can't really talk too much about why Frank won the Navy Cross because a lot of that is redacted and classified, but he's able to speak to some of the things. And he talks about how Frank was part of this small recon team. Their mission got compromised. Castle wanted to abort the mission and save some lives. The officer in charge was an idiot, and he said no. Frank was right. The officer's arm got blown off, so Frank Castle assumed command. The goal was to get every man out alive. There was an ambush that was set up at the LZ, the landing zone, where the only place the helicopter could go. It was kind of like fish in a barrel, except that fish don't know they're going to die. These men did know that they were going to die. Frank Castle, he goes to the LZ all by himself to draw the bastards away. Not his style to order one of his men to do it. A firefight breaks out. All hell breaks loose. Frank Castle against God knows how many. There's silence. Everybody thinks Frank Castle is dead. We're dead. We're all gonna die. It turns out, nope, Frank Castle killed every single one of these people. 32 soldiers killed them all by himself, saved the day, and he's there just grinning like a loon when everyone shows up. And Foggy's like, how did he do that? And Clancy Brown goes, he did it by being Frank Castle.
Yep. One bullet, one body.
One bullet, one body. It's awesome. That's just a great story. And I know that Garth Ennis has written a lot of war stories about Frank Castle. Frank Castle in the comics is a Vietnam veteran. Obviously, that's not something that's really going to work in the modern day Marvel Cinematic Universe. So it's, you know, Gulf War type stuff and Afghanistan and Iraq. And we have in a lot of the comics, there's like these really vividly detailed heroic stories of Frank Castle before he came home. And I wonder if this is ripped from one of those, because a lot of the Punisher stuff definitely seems heavily inspired by the Garth Ennis take on the character. I wonder if you went back, if you could read a comic that was exactly like this.
I mean, it's quite possible. Again, like, I'm not as heavily familiar with Punisher comics as I am with other stuff. But if a listener out there definitely knows the exact comic and can cite that for us, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, that would be really, really cool. I feel like there might be something here. I'm not sure off the top of my head. Linus Wesley, who's been leaving really great comments on postshowrecaps.com with a lot of deep insight into the comic book lore, maybe Linus knows. So Linus, hit us up. Hit us up if that's the case. But either way, D.A. Reyes tries to take this guy to the mat. Yeah, tries to take the colonel to the mat, thanks him for his service. My father served in Vietnam, and he said the only people who truly know what happened are the ones who were there. So how do we know this beautiful story of yours happened the way you described it? And he's like, well, that's simple, because I was there. I'm the idiot who didn't listen to Frank, and I got my arm blown off. And if it was up to me, I would have hanged a Medal of Honor around Frank's neck. How did she miss this detail?
Well, I mean, like she said, like it was
bad look. Bad look, D.A. Reyes. This does not look good.
Yeah, no, it looked real bad. But like, you know, the names were redacted. I questioned because they never showed his hand. So maybe that's why she didn't notice it, or he keeps it pretty well hidden. The names are redacted. There's no way she could have necessarily put that together.
It did not look like he had a redacted arm, you know? This looked like a man who had both arms, but maybe he had a really great prosthetic.
Yeah, prosthetics are really, really advanced now, man. So, yeah, I'm just going to say, though, but it's a great scene. It's a great moment because she gets schooled so hard. Especially since, you know, you're not supposed to really like her, so it's just kind of like, take that.
Yeah, it looks really, really bad for her. She should have known that. She should have done her homework. She should have known better. She should have known better before poking this particular bear.
For sure. But now Clancy Brown is gone. But I wonder, I mean, there's all that talk about like a possible Punisher spinoff or anything, right? If they'll bring him back for that, because that'd be great.
Yeah. Well, do you think that he is definitely done on the show? Is there nothing more for Clancy Brown to do this season of Daredevil? I feel like you're casting a high profile guy in this role. It really is either because he's going to be a main cast member in whatever Punisher spinoff were to come up next, or because he has something important to do this season of Daredevil.
I mean, unless it ends very similar to Rambo First Blood and he shows up to talk to Frank Castle when he's locked himself in a room like a crazy person, then I don't know.
That'd be good.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see a Punisher-style remake of the end of Rambo, but yeah.
Not for nothing, by the way. You know, we're talking a lot about D.A. Reyes, and Blake Tower says to her, that was a bad look, D.A. That did not look great. Yeah. Not a great look for Blake Tower, who is a series regular this season but has done approximately nothing across 8 episodes.
I mean, he's helped Karen. He gave her the paperwork. He went to talk to Nelson.
I guess,
but
this dude just does not have a story, and I am utterly confused why he was made a series regular.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think because he shows up pretty often, but
D.A. Reyes isn't a series regular. Why isn't she a series regular and Blake Tower is?
I didn't know that. See, you keep track of this stuff way better than I do.
I do keep track of this stuff.
Well, Blake Tower, again, as I mentioned, is definitely a character from the comics who kind of has an important part in the lore, you know, more or less later on. So maybe that's why, because there's plans for him.
Maybe eventually it'll happen. All right, so that was a really great war story about Frank Castle. How about another war story, Kevin?
I just love Six's explanation of the hand, and Matt's just like, this fairy tale, but Six just like, isn't your whole thing based around a guy who died to come back to life?
Right. Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's great. It really gets into the mystical stuff, which is kind of like really cool. Like, we touched on sort of a little bit with it, with like Matt's super healing and Nobu's, you know, ability and the hand's ability to stay hidden, their heartbeat and everything. But this really delves into a lot of mystical stuff dealing with immortality and everything like that.
Yeah, Stick tells this story after Matt is like, you know, first off, Matt punches Stick. I love that Stick is like, come on, we did that.
He gets hit a lot. Yeah, he gets hit a lot this episode. Poor Stick.
We already did that.
Didn't we already do this? Which they did. Yeah. They had a huge fight which destroyed Matt's apartment.
Yeah, but this whole thing is tied up in the War Rocks and Midland Circle, the whole Elektra. It's all part of the quote-unquote war, which Matt does not think exists. He thinks that Stick is just a sick old person dying to hit people, who ropes in the wounded so he can watch people throw away their lives and make himself feel important. There's probably some of that that's accurate.
I mean, I guess, but that's also pot calling kettle to a certain extent.
Oh, of course, 100%, 100%. But we have Stick. He tells the story that centuries ago, nobody knows how many, but this thing is ancient. There were warlords all over the place, and one particular group, they found a true treasure. It was the secret of immortality, bringing the dead back to life, and they just painted the shore of the Far East with the blood of anyone who would stand in their way. They've grown in size, power, wealth. They spread across Asia and finally gave themselves a name, Yamanote the Hand.
Yep, which we've talked about for a while now, the secret ninja organization.
Right.
They're very League of Shadows slash League of Assassins-y, which is from Batman mythology in a way,
there
with how
go.
They're being described here.
Yeah.
We haven't had one this episode yet, right? So I had to throw it in there.
Yeah, it's always important to get your Batmans in check.
Yeah.
But their goal is weapons. It's always weapons, not like guns or bombs, but a thing called a black sky, which we got a little bit of a tease of in season one, I believe.
Yes, they were trying to stop them from getting hold of the black sky, which ended up being a child, and
right.
How that plays into anything, we'll find out.
So that's interesting. So the black sky thing is back. So what was that? That was the kid that Stick assassinated this kid, right?
Well, he was going to assassinate him, then Matt stopped him, but then Stick went ahead and assassinated him anyway.
But he assassinated him off screen.
Yes, well, it's hard to show a child that young getting murdered on screen by an elder man with a bow and arrow.
I would be suspicious of that. I would plant a flag there is what I'll say. But we have Stick here. He's talking about the black sky. Black sky is going to be some sort of big deal this season, I would imagine.
I would think.
Yeah, you would think so. So he's saying also that there is like an insurgency called the Chaste.
Yes, that's the group that basically Stick is a part of, that he wanted to recruit Matt into, and that essentially Elektra is a part of.
Right. And he's telling the story about who this kid was that started this thing. He's a kid who was, you know, his village was destroyed by the Hand. Everyone was pretty much killed. A kid pulls a knife from the breast of his dead mom and, quote unquote, goes to work. And going to work means he is killing a ton of people from the Hand. And this kid is now like the representative of this organization that Stick is a part of. And Matt, is he saying like, you're that kid? And is Stick saying, yeah, I am?
I was also confused by that because it seemed to be the somewhat implication they were going with. But as far as I know, that is not the case.
Right.
In the comics, there is another head of the Chaste organization. And, like, Stick doesn't fully lead it. I believe there's someone else who's in charge of it. But I could be mixing up things, but I'm pretty sure that is the case.
Chaste Rice?
Chaste Rice.
Sorry. I crack myself up. So Stick is telling him this whole story, and Matt is not sure whether or not he believes it. He is pretty sure he doesn't believe it. But yeah, Stick does throw out that line back at him where he's like, you're Catholic, Matt. Doesn't your whole belief system hinge on one guy pulling off the whole resurrection thing?
I love it. I love it. Because it is, but it's just really funny.
Yeah. No, it's good. Stick says, believe it or not, the fact remains you're sworn to protect a city that's ground zero in a war that they don't even know is happening all around them. That hole is a start. You can kill, you can die, or you can sit on your ass and watch Hell's Kitchen burn, but the war is bigger than you or me or any of our problems. And he also says, Elektra is on my side. Welcome to the world, kid. Elektra works for moi.
Yeah, just like just rubbing it in his face almost.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. Like, yeah, I mean, the war thing is definitely... Definitely from the comics. That's all accurate. Makes me excited to like. Is there going to be a war in the next couple episodes? Like, how is this all going to shake down? Very curious and very excited to see all this play out because it's stuff that I, you know, when we talked about what do you think season two is going to be about, we've talked about it being about the Hand, and this is definitely finally coming to fruit to bear, so to speak, coming to bear.
We got to combine Elektra and Stick as a pair, and I feel like that has to be electric. Just have to do it. Just gotta,
electric.
Gotta put that out there. So electric is a thing.
Yes.
This electric. Season is electric.
It's electric.
The electric slide.
How do we include some electric two in there? Is that going to happen?
Maybe that's how they're going to get to the bottom of the hole, the electric slide.
They're going to electric boogaloo their way all the way through.
Yeah. No, I meant like literally an actual slide.
Oh, my God. They're just going to. All right. We built the slide. Bring it in.
Matt, it's time to let you in on our terrible secret. We've been building a slide.
Whee!
Squee, squee. Yeah. Squealing like I was when I found out that Clancy Brown was on this show. All right. So let's go back to court. We're going to learn a little bit more about what happened to Frank Castle. The doctor who is on the stand, this man, Dr. Lee, is starting to describe a thing that sounds to Frank like PTSD, and he's not happy about that. It is not PTSD that this man is describing. It is extreme emotional disturbance. It's EED.
Yeah, EED, not PTSD. Different letters.
Different letters. EED, it's a man who is losing control and has a reasonable explanation for the disturbance that's going on in his point of view. His mental state satisfies the conditions of extreme emotional disturbance to Dr. Lee. This is all seeming like a big win for Nelson and Murdoch and the Frank Castle side of things until this guy in the back of the court is like, "You killed my father."
Yeah, the judge, I always love that the judge is like, jury, please ignore that. Pretend it never happened.
And disregard like,
it
that
did.
Comment.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
But, you know, on one hand, yes, that is traumatic. That definitely sucks. But the implication is that guy's dad probably killed a lot of people, too.
That guy's dad was probably a bad guy. I mean, maybe the people in the court don't necessarily think that because they don't have the, you know, omniscient view of what the Punisher is truly all about that the viewers have. But we know that if Frank killed that guy was bad news, probably.
Yeah, probably. Not that, again, that I'm just like, yeah, but then it's like, it's just that vicious cycle, right? Because your dad.
It's a vicious cycle.
I kill because I'm angry, and I'm angry because I kill, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, not great for Frank, but...
Frank Bastard.
That entire discussion is interesting about the EED and the idea of fight or flight and being trapped in that moment. We kind of touched on it earlier about being trapped in the moment, and it seems like where they're going of the argument of where Frank is, and I guess that's somewhat accurate, but I don't think entirely accurate.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But Frank, you know, even Frank is kind of like, I did that. I took that kid's father from him. And he's like kind of thinking about it, and he's like, I got the sense that I don't think that Frank is really a guy who regrets much about how he's doing stuff, but it did give me pause for just a second that he's like kind of contemplating it.
Yeah, you know, being stuck in this, like, fight or flight mentality, it makes sense, certainly. I don't think that's where Frank Castle is all the time. I definitely think, you know, that's just, it's a good defense, but I don't think it's accurate. And you know what? From the way that Frank actually outbursts later on, seems that he really doesn't think so either, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's doing a thing. He wants to go to jail, but I also think that it's, you know, how he actually feels.
Yeah, there's a level of truth there, you know?
Yeah, it's like the top level. It is all the truth. But Karen wants Frank Castle to take the stand. Wants him to take the stand. The jury has to know what happened to you and what you're going through every single day. After this afternoon, we don't have any other shot. Frank doesn't think they can win anyway because Frank Castle is not an idiot and he understands that that is absolutely the case. But Karen says, like, we can reduce charges. And even if this isn't important to you, it's important to me. I know you're not a monster. And Frank says, you sure about that?
Yeah. Are you sure, Karen? Are you sure?
I love that. The Fensler films, they, you sure about that? Yeah, you sure about that? What if I find these men who did that to my family? What if nothing changes? What if this is just me now? And Karen says, then don't you deserve to know that too?
Which,
at the expense of what?
Yeah, of a lot of dead bodies.
Yeah, at the expense of a lot of dead people. So, I don't know, Karen. Maybe if he's like the one who's saying that, at a certain point, you gotta be like, all right, Frank. So Karen has convinced Frank Castle to take the stand. She is going to convince Foggy that this is a good idea. Foggy, once again, I'm sure, is fantasizing about the butcher shop.
Yeah, just this is where he's just like, this is where my life, you know, my
How
mom
did
knew
this
it.
Happen?
My
How?
Mother knew this was going to be my future.
How did we get here? How did I get here? Yeah.
poor Foggy. I just, you know, it does suck. And he's, you know, he tries to convince Matt to be like, you've got to do this. This is you. You've got to be here for this one. I can't do this. Which, I don't know. Couldn't he have? I feel like he's been doing pretty well.
I think he's been doing pretty well, but I don't know. But he feels like this is the type of stuff that Matt is better at than Foggy. Maybe Foggy just wants Matt to show up for work. Like, he's just like, you know, it's like, you know,
no,
what?
It's so important. We definitely need you here.
You know what? This guy just has to show up to his job. I'm sick of this. This is nonsense. So maybe that's what it's all about. But he is saying, you get Matt here, and we will put Frank on the stand. I've got no problem with that as long as he is the guy who is grilling Frank. And, you know, we will find out later that his other big thing is, well, Matt is Daredevil, so yeah, he kind of has a little bit better of a hold on this guy's psychology than I do.
He has a unique perspective.
Right. So Karen's like, all right, sweet, this is going to be great. I will go and get Matt.
The moment she says that, it's like, oh, I can see where this
You're
is
like,
headed.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
This will not be good. Although I thought that it would play out differently. We'll talk about that in a second. But first, back at Matt's apartment, Matt is going to talk to Elektra. It turns out that they did not meet by fate or luck. They met because he was a mark. She was a woman on a mission. Stick wanted Matt back. Stick sent Elektra to get Matt Murdock back.
Yeah, which is a pretty awful, sad thing to hear, I think, where it's just kind of like, oh, I thought it was romance and interest that brought you to me. And it's like, nah, I was supposed to. Now, that said, it doesn't mean that obviously feelings couldn't have developed and stuff like that. There's always this weird thing where I get it's like, oh, no, this mistrust thing. But it doesn't mean that the mission could have changed for
her. I mean, come on. This works out so well for so many people, this whole, like, I'm on a mission. I'm not supposed to fall in love, but I did. That's the entire premise of Never Been Kissed.
Oh, my God.
That's Drew Barrymore goes undercover in the school.
I'm so bad at you right now.
And Michael Vartan is like, what? And she's like, yeah, I've never been kissed, Michael Vartan. Let's fall in love. And he's like, all right, against better judgment, I will do it.
I am so mad at you.
Michael Vartan, who co-starred with Jennifer Garner and also dated her in real life for a time on Alias, and Jennifer Garner being Elektra. So this all comes back together, Kevin.
Oh, you're right. You're right. I just
fixed
missed
it. Fixed
yeah.
it. I fixed it.
No.
It's saved.
No.
It's fixed.
Never been kissed.
But Elektra says, I've never been kissed. I fell in love with you, Matt. Listen to my heart if you must. You know it's true.
Yeah, which is a good thing to use, except knowing that she's been trained by Stick and has, like, ninja stuff to her. Not exactly the quickest judge to tell if she's telling the truth, you know?
Yeah, but Matt is trying to say, you know, we don't have to do this like Stick. We don't have to kill. It's an impossible choice that I make and remake every single day, every single second sometimes, and you can do that too. And he's really trying to convince her to change her ways, and she's kind of like, yo, Stick is totally listening to all of this. And Matt's like, I don't care!
Yeah, he is. He's just eating an apple, though.
Yeah. Stick loves apples.
Yeah, he eats a lot of apples.
He ate at least two different apples that I can think of in this episode.
That is accurate, because I think one of them was red and one of them was green.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so you know there are two different ones.
Yeah,
but they're good for you. Apple a day keeps the doctor away.
That's how he's so healthy.
Yes, that's how he's so healthy and ancient.
That's the secret to his ways.
That's it. They found the secret to immortality. Yeah. Apples.
Apples. We've kept
Eat
the doctors
a lot
away.
Of apples.
Yeah, we never need to see a doctor ever. But Matt is telling Elektra, like, I felt hollow when I thought that you were going to die. My feelings will stay for you. So Matt, he is making it pretty clear that I want you to stick around. I want Stick to leave, and I want you and I to be a thing. And he hasn't even gotten into a big blow up with Karen yet, but he is making his choice pretty clear here.
I mean, yeah, that's Matt Murdock for you. This is the Matt Murdock from the comics, man. He's a bit of a dick when it comes to relationships. He's not great. So this is pretty much in line with how this stuff goes. But yeah, it's just like, you know, like, just leave Stick, join me, and together we could not kill anyone.
Yeah. In walks Karen Page, and this is uncomfortable.
Not even in walks, like, Stick just opens the door. You got company.
Yeah, you got company here. And Karen shows up and sees what's going on and does not want to talk. She says, Frank Castle's taking the stand tomorrow and your friend can use your help. That's all. She leaves. Stick goes, nice meeting you.
Scott Glenn's delivery is just so fantastic. I love it. I love everything about it.
Between this this and The Leftovers, Scott Glenn's TV character situation right now is on lockdown.
He's also on The Leftovers?
Yeah, he is.
I really got to watch that show.
Leftovers is great, man. He's really good on it, too. He's not on it all the time, but when he is on, he's really, really great. This was a really valid point from R. Philly, who wrote in and said, when you find an old blind man in your blind boss boyfriend's apartment after he misses work, don't you ask WTF is going on before you wig out about the woman in his bed? Was that scene a little too rushed? Did it feel genuine? I do feel like Karen probably should have asked some questions.
Yeah, I'm just gonna pull out the it's a trope thing that Antonio Mazzaro, I think, tweeted at us at one point, which is accurate. Like, it's a very tropey thing, and this does frustrate me because it's something that I think Robin and I talked about ourselves and where this gonna head and how it might be a tropey situation with this. And it is. It's atypical where the other girl walks in, sees what's going on, then gets upset and leaves. Now, I'm not saying she has no right to be upset. She definitely should be angry about the whole thing. But it's so many times it's like, why are they arguing? Because they decided not to have a conversation. Like, that's kind of what it is. Like, no questions asked. Just, I'm going to be upset because I need to be upset with the plot right now. And then she just leaves, as opposed to, like, I have questions. Like, it's not even like she found them naked in bed together either. There's a blind old man there. Like, does she think there's some weird voyeuristic or non-voyeuristic thing going on? Like, there's just legit things to be like, this is not your atypical scenario. You may want to ask some questions.
Yeah, it could be like, is this guy, like, a parental figure to you? Is this person who's in bed who is clearly injured, is that something I should be concerned with? Are you okay, Matt, this guy who I've been out on several perfect dates with? Is this something that I should be concerned about? But instead, she's just like, no, screw this.
Yeah, exactly. It's I will say for right now, especially like this entire season, it's the thing that I think is not good.
Yeah, it's not great. It's the one real sour note in this episode. And this episode, as we've talked about and are continuing to talk about, is phenomenal. So I think that it's worth highlighting. But I thought that, this would have been a great opportunity to be like, Karen, psst, I'm Daredevil.
Yeah, right.
Can you imagine if that had happened in this episode on top of everything else? If Matt's like, by the way, Karen, all this weird stuff you're seeing right now, it's because I'm Daredevil.
Yeah, no, it would have been great and unexpected. But that's what's nice. It would have been great and unexpected, but instead they went with what's sort of expected, and that does kind of suck. But then they got other unexpected crazy stuff happening in this episode. So you know what? Balances out.
Balances out. All right. So we've got the big court scene where Matt he shows up on time, for the most part.
he's doing well there. He showed up to his job. What follows, it isn't great. But he shows up to try and do his job, and that's when we learn Matt Murdock is actually a terrible lawyer.
Well, I don't feel like this is his fault.
It's not his fault.
It doesn't go well, and we can make fun of him, but it's really not his thing. Matt Murdock, he's going to cross-examine Frank Castle. I don't even know if that's the correct terminology. He's going to grill the guy. He's going to treat him like a hostile witness.
It's his witness, so he's not cross-examining.
So he's just straight up examining him. There's no cross. Yes. No cross to bear here. I don't know. I don't know stuff. Antonio, tell me what I'm doing right and tell me what I'm doing wrong. Reach out
to
me.
All of it wrong.
all of it wrong. So he's going to talk to Frank, but he already notices that something is wrong before things start because there is a guard who says to Frank, he says, think about what you want. So clearly someone has gotten to Frank at this point, and I think Matt knows that at this point.
Yeah, I think he does, but I don't think he was anticipating Frank having the outburst that he did.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
So Matt's trying to like really hoist Frank Castle up on his shoulders and show him for the hero that he is. He's saying that the way that Frank has gone about doing things is really wrong. He's killed people. That's not great, but he doesn't deserve to be punished. He deserves our help. This is a man who, believes in what he's doing, and this city needs heroes and the types of heroes that the DA is trying to destroy. So he is, he's saying this for Frank, but he's also definitely saying this for himself.
Yeah, to a certain extent, but like again,
a decent extent.
Yeah, because he feels like the city does need heroes, and the law isn't fully doing, isn't fully accomplishing the goal. But the killing part, I don't think he obviously agrees with.
No, well, he's saying that. He says the killing thing is too far, and this is a guy who needs our help. He doesn't need to be punished for that.
Right.
Too bad Frank Castle does not want any help.
Yeah.
At all.
Just starts swearing, starts cursing, starts getting real angry.
Yeah, he says, I'm not crazy. I'm smack dab in the middle of my right goddamn mind. Every scumbag, lowlife, and maggot that I've killed, I did it because I liked it. Hell,
I liked it.
I loved it.
I'm right here. Yeah. Come at me.
Come at me. I love this part where he's like, you call me the Punisher, the big bad Punisher. I am the Punisher.
Yeah. As they're dragging him away, screaming, I am the Punisher. Just reminded me of Liar Liar, where he gets dragged away screaming, I am Jose Canseco.
Yeah. He is Jose Canseco.
Yeah. No, joking aside on that, like, this is a great scene, another great scene for John Bernthal playing the Punisher. I think it's a very powerful scene.
He is awesome, and I am at the point where I do want to see the Punisher show.
I don't know if I'm at that point, but that's just my bias against the Punisher.
I'm there. I would watch the Punisher show. I think that they could do really, really terrific stuff with John Bernthal in that role as the lead. I think that there's a lot of great stories that they could tell with this version of the Punisher. He is the best version of the Punisher we've ever seen.
Oh, no way. Dolph Lundgren.
Dolph, no. Sorry, Dolph.
Yeah, no, for sure he's the best version of the Punisher, yeah. But I will not argue that.
But this whole thing blows up. It's not Matt's fault because Matt knows that somebody got to Frank, but nobody else is listening to that. Foggy is pissed. Foggy's glad that they lost, but he's pissed with Matt. Karen is done. Karen is out. She breaks it off. She says, I'm done. I don't care. Maybe you're an alcoholic. Maybe you're in Fight Club. You wouldn't tell me because those are the first two rules. Maybe you're sleeping with a ton of women. I don't care. I'm done. This city does need heroes, but you are not one of them.
Which is just bananas again. It's just so like, I'm ending this without ever having a conversation about anything. Bye. And it's just kind of like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like I wish that there had been some conversation with Karen and Matt. I think that that was an opportunity to be like, hey, I'm Daredevil, but, you know.
Yeah. It's it's frustrating because it's such a tropey storyline. It's such an overdone thing that it really. It does bug me on a level.
Wonderful, but that's the only not wonderful thing about this episode. So
right, you
can poke it out, you can talk about it, but I think that everything else is really good. Elektra versus Stick, the breakup of Electric.
Yeah, just poor Stick getting slapped left and right by people today in this episode.
Yeah, so Elektra is saying, I'm done, Matt believes in me, Matt thinks that I can be a good person, Matt thinks I can change who I am, but Stick says something very ominous and says, what do you think he's going to say when he finds out what you are, what you've always been? You haven't told him yet, have you? And we will see by the end of the episode, I think, that we can connect that when she kills the hand, the guy from the hand, that she is fundamentally a killer.
Yeah, no, I have in my notes is just kind of like, she's like, I made a choice to be with you. And then immediately kill someone. Like, it's so crazy in like how fast that happens. But as I said, it's just kind of like, she's just like, this is who I am. And she's like smiling about it. And I'm like, oh man, she's so delightfully insane.
Yeah, she really is. So he also says before he leaves, he says, aside from saving your ass tonight or this week, you have no idea what else I've protected you from. What's he been protecting Elektra from?
Yeah, no, I love the vagueness. I'm hoping we find out the answers as the series goes.
Yeah.
There's only a few episodes left, really, right?
Yeah.
Eight, so like five? I guess five is a good amount.
Five is a great amount. Five is a perfect amount. I'm very excited about that. Stick leaves. When he leaves, he gets back into the car with his driver and says, enough with these amateurs. Time to get the band back together. Head to the wall.
I don't know what any of that means.
He's going to recruit Jon Snow. He's going to talk to Samwell Tarly.
Do not recruit Samwell Tarly. Yeah.
No, Samwell Tarly would be great. He'd be great in this. He's well-read. He is, he's well-studied, and he is brave at this point.
Are you kidding me? They're fighting ninjas. Do you see all the people associated with Stick? They're not Samwell Tarlys.
I'm so craven.
You're out. You're out, Samwell.
Out, am I?
Yeah, no, it's a very nice little, peak interest moment when Stick says that.
Who is he going to assemble? Are there, and without saying any names, do you have a sense of any of the characters that Stick is familiar with that could potentially show up on the show? Again, no names.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just generally say, I mean, the Chase is an organization, so.
So there are people that you could see popping up here that you would be excited to see.
Sure. I mean, like, you know, they're not like major characters that I don't think they'll pull out. But I think that there are people in the chase that they can definitely bring out of the woodwork.
All right. Well, Matt comes home. He, you know, has his conversation with Elektra. He says, like, yeah, I lost today. I lost more than the case, but I didn't lose you. I love you.
Yeah, there's this, like, yeah, Matt just like, well, Karen's gone, so I guess I'm all in.
Yeah, it's like, all right, I guess the choice has been made for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he is in. He is down with Elektra. Nothing's happening right now. She needs to get some rest because she was, you know, sliced across the chest with a poison sword. So I think rest is in order. He leaves and
immediately gets shot by arrows.
Yeah. And he's just like, there's a great, when he gets shot, there's this great look on his face where he's like, I've been shot.
Yeah. Good God, I've been shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's great. And then immediate awesome fight scene. And this is what we're talking about before, where it comes into play. He is a bit out of it because those arrows are clearly going to be poisoned.
Yeah, very clearly poisoned. But the fight scene is awesome, awesome, awesome. Once again, just ever since the introduction of Elektra, the whole ninja quotient of this show has been ramped up, and it's been really, really awesome. This is another great one. It's not the Nobu fight or anything, because obviously this is a kid that we are dealing with. He is not like some super badass monster, awesome ninja person, but he is still pretty cool. Daredevil is a match for him. He dodges Shurikens and ninja stars with tables. It's really cool. And then Elektra comes along and slices this poor kid's throat open.
Yeah, like just there, and then just because they're fighting, and like, yeah, there's really cool moments in this fight. He pulls out the sword, you know, the arrow that's sticking out of Matt gets cut.
That was a great moment too. Yeah,
which was, yeah, I love that. And then, like, you know, fight's over, the mask comes off, and he's just like, it's just a kid. And then immediately just like, throat slice, and Elektra's just like covered in blood. It's just that this is who I am. And it's just kind of like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, she's a killer. She's a killer. She's, you know, she is Styx's disciple. So this is the way it plays. So she kills this kid, and then Matt starts like losing consciousness. So for sure, this guy is poisoned.
Yeah, I don't think it's just Matt having a panic attack, but like, my decisions, what have I done? I've made such bad choices.
Yeah, he's just like succumbing to the weight of screwing everything up.
Yeah, and then passes out, and then
we get to the end of the episode, which we've already talked about, the return of Wilson Fisk, Frank Castle. This is why he tanked the trial. R. Philly had written, when Frank was tanking the case, did you guys immediately suspect Kingpin's involvement? How psyched are you to see some Castle Fisk interaction? What's their comic relationship like? So there's a lot to unpack there. The first thing is, I don't know about you, Kevin, I wasn't suspecting the Kingpin at all. I thought that maybe he was going to go into prison because whoever killed his family was going to be there.
Yeah, zero, zero, zero assumption and zero thought that the Kingpin was going to be involved.
Right.
So it was,
which still might be the case. It still might be like the Kingpin's like, I see you got my message. I know who killed your family and he's here. Like, that could be what's coming up next.
Right, right, right. Now that there's obviously ways that we can think about how the Kingpin will be involved, but I didn't think, my mind did not go to like, oh, he must be going to prison to meet the Kingpin.
Right.
And then like, it wasn't until like he walked, like I seriously had no clue up until he walks into that gym and you just see the weights and I'm like, oh
yeah,
and
yeah.
I start freaking out because you knew immediately from the weights that he's lifting who it was going to be.
That's when I knew. I was like, oh man, this is good. This is going to be great. How about the comic relationship between Frank Castle and Wilson Fisk? Can you give a little bit of a tease of what we can expect from that?
I mean, not great. the whole thing is that the Kingpin runs organized crime and Frank Castle kills organized crime. So not exactly the greatest of comic book relationships, so to speak.
Okay, well, we'll see how that plays out. I see you got my message. That's the note that we end on. How about that being the note we end on here? Because I want to start watching the next episode, and I want to get back on the horn and podcast about that immediately with you, Kevin. We are trucking through this weekend of Daredevil podcasting. Really, really good stuff today, Kevin.
Yes, no, I'm so pumped to follow up to that ending, because Vincent D'Onofrio back as the Kingpin.
Oh, that's so good. I really want to see what that's all about. So let's hop off the line here. Let's end it here. Hashtag electric.
Electric.
E-L-E-K-T-R-I-C-K. Use that as your hashtag. Tweet that to Kevin at Kev Mahadeo. I'm at Round Howard. We will be back tomorrow with the next episode of the Daredevil Season 2 podcast. Episode 9, 7 Minutes in Hell.
Is it 7 minutes in hell? I thought it was 7 minutes in heaven.
No, I guess this is a different game.
Oh, it doesn't sound like as it's as fun.
No, it sounds much worse. does not sound very nice. So we will see. We will see what that's all about. We will be back tomorrow talking about that episode. Take care, everybody. Goodbye.